You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to continue our series of draft countdowns, and today we're going to talk about the cornerbacks. One of our favorite all-time guests and friends of the show, Michael Crawford, here to talk about cornerbacks with me. Michael, how you doing?
Hey, Ken. I'm doing great. Can't complain. Happy to be back and really excited to talk about this cornerback group.
Yeah, so it's a pretty cool group, that's for sure. Maybe we talk a little bit about the Ravens' needs up front, because obviously that's going to drive a lot of this. I tell folks, I make my list for the Ravens in terms of what characteristics I think can help them, meaning outside corners come ahead of slot in this draft, I think. But otherwise, how do I look at these guys? The Ravens now in need of multiple cornerbacks, I think we'd say, really need to get younger at the position.
Yeah, I mean, you look at that group, and obviously Marlon Humphrey, kind of the lead dog, right, in that group. But then you look at the rest of the guys, and it's Brandon Stevens, it's Pepe Williams, Jordan Armour Davis. Who am I leaving out? I know I'm leaving out.
Pepe Williams, Jordan Armour Davis. We still have Ardarius Washington around. Hamilton's at the slot.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the first thing that comes to mind is, who's your immediate starter opposite Marlon? And I've heard some people talk about Brandon Stevens because he's done it in a couple of games last year. But to your point, even if that's the case, which I don't know that it will be, because I think they're probably going to take a corner pretty early in this draft, you probably still want to add some depth and some youth. You want to kind of infuse that into that room, and you can't rule out the fact that they're probably going to bring in at least one vet. I guess, can we still call it free agency? I guess technically it's still free agency, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's after the draft, because I know there's that date where you can sign free agents and it doesn't count against you. Yeah. So I could see them bringing in a vet too, but I definitely think they're looking to infuse, bodies and youth into that room.
I think it would make sense to have a a cheap vet slot corner, because there are those guys are out there. Slot corners, there's a lot of size limited players. They almost have to play slot. Only one of three cornerback positions and less than one of three snaps for cornerbacks are taken out of the slot. So you want to have, it's if you have a shortage there, it's a good thing. If you have a shortage on the outside, that's a much more critical thing, that you, if you don't have the correct number of aircraft carriers, as I always say, on the outside to cover, that's the bigger problem. But there are guys who can play the slot, and the Ravens have been pretty good at getting guys, Corey Ivey and Corey Graham, both guys who really helped the team in the slot when they were able to pick them up off the effectively scrap heap.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this question. I always say I'm not going to derail us, and here I'm about to do it 3 minutes into the show or less than 3 minutes. I've been pretty staunch in, it's my opinion, it's just my personal opinion, right? We all have preferences, that I'd like to see Kyle Hamilton stay in the slot.
Yeah,
primarily, they're going to move him around. He's not going to be exclusively in the slot, but I'd like to see him, you know, that kind of became his primary role as the season went on. Mm-hmm. I really liked him there, particularly in their defense and their system and the way it's structured. But I know I've heard other opinions like, hey, maybe we, you know, bring in a slot corner like you mentioned, or draft a slot corner and then move him around so he can do more safety type stuff. I just don't know that I love that. How do you feel about?
Okay, first of all, you're not derailing us at all, because it's my next topic on my list here. So I'd say that Hamilton in the slot is the biggest decision they have to make. I would agree with you. I could make the argument that it does not give his instincts as much play as they would get if he were on the back end of a cover two. But then I don't really, you know, at strong safety, I don't think that's an ideal fit for him either. I actually really love him in the slot as an underneath guy in their zone systems, which basically creates another enormous man to throw over for quarterbacks. And he reads the quarterback very well, even in short area, can get there. And his tackling has been way beyond expectation for me. I mean, it's a very high level, uses his arms very well. Rushes effectively off the slot. It's just people are not used to it because it's kind of a different skill set at that position, but I love it.
I love it too. And you hit on all of the points. And I know one of the counters that I hear sometimes is like, okay, well, what if he gets matched up with a receiver who's more athletic than him, right? And you've seen it in a couple of games where that might have been, if it wasn't the second Bengals game, it might even been in the playoff Bengals game where, you know, you try to go, no, or I might be thinking about the Browns game. Yeah, I might be thinking about that second Browns game where I think they put Amari Cooper. That's what it was. I think they put Amari Cooper in there a couple of times, and he was able to kind of get some separation and catch a couple of balls. But then what the Ravens do, not only in that game, they did in other games when Hamilton is, they just start blitzing. Just like, okay, if that's what you're going to do, we understand that's not the greatest matchup in the world with him against, you know, your top wide receiver with him in, you know, in the slot. We'll just blitz him. And he's obviously fast enough. I think he does a pretty good job in terms of his timing with blitz. And then he's 6'4 with that wingspan. So your quarterback's got to make a pretty quick decision. And he's also got a maneuver around, you know, this huge object coming his way. So I don't really see a huge downside with it. I hear some people make that argument, but I think you can kind of mitigate that a little bit with whether it's, you know, playing him in zone if you're going to keep him in coverage, or blitzing if you feel like, hey, they're all zone turns to man at some point, and, you know, it's going to become, you know, not a great matchup for him. Well, let's just send him.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, it definitely gives you a lot more pass rush options in terms of the flexibility of your pass rush playing in that slot. I just really like it. There's a couple things that I'm just so thrilled about. One is I'm so happy that he was able to adapt to the position so quickly. And you look at the comparison being Brandon Stevens is a guy who's played all over the secondary in college. And admittedly, he's a kind of a late convert to playing defensive back at all after the running back thing. But still, he played a lot of different positions in college, and in fact was moved around at SMU on a down by down basis, not even on a by game or by series or anything like that, which has been mostly what he's done with the Ravens. Brandon Stevens has had a lot of trouble readapting. Kamilai Correa, a lot of trouble adapting for his inside outside linebacker. I mean, the multiple position guys, Michael Orr, left tackle, right tackle, I have had a lot of trouble adapting new positions. Hamilton, like that. I mean, honestly, when he first moved to slot corner, I'm seeing him on the field every time he sees the slot corner now. And everybody else is saying, oh, no, he's just a matchup guy. He's moving in there when people are, it was bull crap. I mean, he's in there, I guess, every receiver down after down, you know, and he's just adapted the position very well. And related to the other thing, the matchup thing you mentioned, there are always going to be the Cole Beasleys and the smaller slippery slot guys, Welker and either of the Buffalo guys now. Those guys give anybody trouble. The ability to run a quick rip route is going to beat most cornerbacks, period, and is going to create an open opportunity for a short area play. I'd rather have a good tackler with that than I need to have the guy who can reach across the body and make a play on the football, which is virtually non-existent on those on those throws to the slot guys.
Yeah, and we saw, I think, as the season progressed with Mike McDonald's defense, it became more of the keep the lid on the cookie jar approach, right? We can do all the exotic stuff, but that can expose us in some ways, right? Not only can you just flat out get beat by it if the team identifies it and has a good answer for it, you also have to factor in your guys maybe not fully understanding, you know, everything that's going on with the skies and where they're supposed to be, especially when you got young guys in there. So I think as the season went on, you saw that done a little bit more selectively. It probably like the most extreme version of it where it went like really, really bad was the Dolphins game. And then as the season went on, you could kind of see him say, hey, let's just keep everything in front of us. Let's come up and make tackles. You know, we're going to have some opportunities to make plays on the ball in addition to getting stops. And, you know, Denard, you know, my partner on the Fire Zone show, Denard, we would talk about it all season long. He said, look, he loves it because he's a big zone defense proponent. He's just like, look, just keep everything in front of you and make tackles. You'll have opportunities to get turnovers if you keep everything in front of you and you can get pressure on the passer and that kind of thing. But he's like, when you do this stuff where you're kind of gambling and, you know, taking some risks that are kind of unnecessary, you expose yourself when you don't have to. So that is his, I'm a little bit more, I was a big Wink guy. I was a big Rex guy. I love the mindset of, you know, solve your problems with aggression. So he and I go back and forth on that. So it was an adjustment for me. I told him throughout the season of sort of shifting kind of the way I like to see defense played, more pressure, more aggressiveness to, okay, not that they don't have any of that or they didn't do any of that, but it was a shift, right, in the weighting of it. And it, by and large, it worked pretty well as the season went on.
Yeah, I looked at the number of, it was either 6 or 7 man pass rushers. I think it was 6 man pass rushers. They have a very low total for the Ravens this last year as compared to the number of times they did it with Wink. And that's where it really shows up. They're still rushing 5 a lot. And you can rush 4 and you can rush 4. And they are not the same depending on how you zone blitz or you know, drop 2, rush 2 off the edge, whatever you might do. So there's a lot of different ways to do it. Stunts, twists, simulated pressure. If you drop 2 guys from the line of scrimmage, when you show 6, all of the things you do to confuse. And I agree, it's a difference, but I think that one thing about guys who are not aggressive all the time is that they're very adaptable. And I do think Wink was pretty damn adaptable for being a pressure guy and moving off of that when he really needed to. But I think that, what we've seen so far from McDonald has been extreme adaptability of pressure to fit the quarterback.
Yeah. I give him a ton of credit for it because I think it was one of those things where a realization on his part of how he needed to adapt in terms of how he called games, but also, I mean, you have to think there was some real listening to the players. And I know that happens all the time because it's more partnership, right? Mm-hmm. At the NFL level than certainly high school and even college where it's kind of, hey, I'm the coach, you do what we say. NFL, it's a little bit more of a partnership. And you got to imagine that he really took into account what some of the more veteran guys were saying, like, hey, maybe we don't need to do quite as much as some of the stuff that we were doing early in the season. Maybe we can dial some of this back a little bit and just kind of play these calls. And then, you know, sort of adjusting to what each guy did well within the defense. So he could have been, you know, more stubborn and just say, hey, this is what I do, and we're going to just keep doing it until we get it right. And I don't think he did that. I think he did the total opposite of that. I think he's like, hey, we got to do what you guys do best. Doesn't matter what I know and what I think is good. It matters what you know and what you can do consistently.
That's what they always say about good coordinators on either side of the ball, is they adapt to their personnel and build their defense or offense around that. And I think we've only heard it from Monken so far, but man, I'm loving the, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. I am buying into what, you know, what he will bring. And if, and, you know, just give me players who can make plays and I'll find it, figure out how to use them.
Get guys in space, get the ball out of the quarterback's hand, push the ball down the field. That's some sweet Kool-Aid. got a lot of sugar in there right now. It tastes really good. It sounds really good.
Yeah, absolutely love it. So we will see. The fate of Marcus Peters probably has to wait until after the draft, I'm thinking, at this point. And obviously, there's no downside to the Ravens signing Peters earlier than the draft. It might tip their hand. They may already have an agreement with him, for all we know, and they just don't want to show their hand on draft day. And they say, hey, man, could we wait? I don't think I'd be too keen on that if I were Marcus Peters. I'd want to know it was locked down and the Ravens weren't going to flip on me and Joey Porter Jr.,
yeah,
Deontay Banks or Malcolm Forbes becomes available and they say, we got to have him. But we'll see.
Yeah.
All right. So, and some of the youth things are a matter of the waiting is not good. Obviously, J.A.D. and Pepe were rookies who kind of both flamed out last year. And it's not like they're not going to get additional chances. I just think that Pepe goes into a pool of players who has a chance, and J.A.D. is going to be fighting to be the first backup. And he's probably fighting a little bit of an uphill battle against Brandon, but I don't think there's anybody who's saying that we're going to this season with either of those guys as the starting cornerback. I think that would be a huge under allotment of resources to the position.
Yeah. I think you want to keep those competitions as open as possible. You had, like you mentioned, two, you know, rookies in Pepe and JAD. We all know what comes along with being a rookie. It can be a bit of a roller coaster, you know, ride that goes on. And sometimes what people don't take into account is, you know, obviously, you know, this because you go to the off season stuff and training camp and you see, you know, how they're installing different things and putting things in, but they continue to install things as the season goes on. And so what you're learning at the beginning, and you say, okay, these young guys, they look like they got it, right? They're playing fast. They're flying around. Well, as you continue to add things throughout the season, it can be tough, right? Because it's like, man, I have these handful of calls. I really feel good about these. It took OTAs and camp and everything for me to get them down, but I feel good. And then we get into week 2, 3, 4, and it's like, all right, now we're putting in 4 or 5 more things. Oh, hold on. I just got the other things that we had now. So I think, you know, that can weigh on guys as the season goes on sometimes. And it's like, it can be a little much for some guys at times. It's a sink or swim kind of thing a lot of times in the NFL. So doesn't mean you write the guys off. It's just an adjustment period, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. I would love to see either of them come back and play well. It's just, you know, obviously results were not what we'd hoped for in the first year that he did stuff for it. Let's jump right into our top 10s. We do this always in reverse order, 10-1. Michael, you're the guest. Let's hear your number 10 guy. Talk about
it. All right. I'm going to start out with Syracuse cornerback Garrett Williams is my number 10 guy. What better way to start than a guy who's coming off a torn ACL?
There you go.
This is probably not ideal in a lot of ways. I do have some honorable mentions. Maybe we'll sneak those guys in at the end.
At the end, yeah.
But yeah, Garrett Williams tore his ACL. I want to say it was in October. It was against Notre Dame. Yeah, I want to say it was in October. But, you know, before that, 5'10", 192 pounds, 31-inch arms, 9 1/4-inch hands. I tried to get all of the measurables down on these guys. I'm sure you probably have it too, but you know, if people are like, why does he keep mentioning it? Just to give you a visual of kind of, you know, what the body type might be on these guys. Obviously, he wasn't able to test because of the torn ACL. I'd imagine Ravens and other teams don't have full medical on him because of that. I don't know what they were able to get at the combine in terms of a medical eval, if that even took place. Maybe it was just, hey, here's where he is in his recovery, check back, you know, whatever period of time that is. So I don't know what the status of that is. I know sometimes they'll bring those guys in for meetings because they don't have medicals, and you try to get them, you know, obviously as much as you can get. But just in terms of the player, solid size for the cornerback position, a guy who I think showed, you know, some man coverage traits, you know, ability to kind of change direction pretty fluidly, likes to get his hands on receivers, willing tackler, which is something I'm always looking for at cornerback. You don't necessarily have to be Marlon Humphrey, but I need you to be willing to tackle because you're going to be called upon to do that at times. A guy who has been tied to the Ravens, as you check around the internet at different things. Somebody who they may have had a meeting with somewhere along the line. I'm not always sure how credible that Walter football site is, but he tracks a lot of the meet, or they, I shouldn't say he, I don't know who's doing it. They track a lot of the meetings and stuff like that. So I think Garrett Williams was on their list of, you know, one of the guys they allegedly met with. But again, like I said, that could be for a variety of reasons. It could be medical. It could be, you know, whatever. But he's a guy, as we're starting off this list, working our way up, who, you know, I think you could do worse. You know, if you get a good prognosis on the ACL in terms of the recovery, later in the draft, if they accumulate some other picks, you know, other than the five that they have right now, and you say, hey, we like this guy on tape before the injury, you know, we'd love to bring him in and develop him. I think you could do worse than Garrett Williams.
That's fair enough. You know, Garrett Williams, okay, I have three lists. So I have my top 10, then I have my honorable mentions, and I have four guys who are on a list of no, they're too much of a risk. And on a 4-year contract basis, I can't waste the time I've got on that. And Garrett, unfortunately, is on that third list. And here's my reasoning. First of all, I went to Syracuse. That's my alma mater. And it really pains me to say that about this guy. But he listed 2 inches shorter. He was listed 2 inches larger than he actually measured at the combine at 5'10". And I'm not too concerned about that because you can still play on the outside at 5'10". But he's size challenged for that position out there. That's not the problem really at all. It's the ACL is the issue. And then here's more importantly, and this is really bad. He had a damning consistency of really poor big plays allowed. So in 2022, he allowed 12 yards per target. I mean, think about it. Think about a wide receiver. The Ravens have never had a wide receiver or any receiver average 12 yards per target. Mark Andrews at 11.04 in his rookie year is the record holder. And they only have three other guys who've ever been at 10. And, you know, it's not a small number of total targets. And unfortunately, his career is almost as bad at 8.7 yards per target. So the big cornerbacks, you know, you want them under 6 yards per target at the college level, and almost most of them never get thrown at. So the problem was really results-based as well. Now, in Garrett Williams' case, you guy playing corner, you figure, well, he probably had crappy safeties who weren't getting over to help him at all. Syracuse had two of the best safeties in the nation the last two, you know, the two previous years, Cisco and Trill Williams, right? Trill Williams? Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. They both ended up going to the NFL. They had another great cornerback on the other side, you know, Melifano that went to the NFL also in the third round. It's like, what's his excuse for these terrible on-field
pass games? Rush. I'm going to blame it on pass rush.
That could be. That could be. You find something. So anyway, he dropped off my list of the top 10 with those multiple concerns. So I couldn't. He's a no for me. I probably wouldn't use a pick anywhere in the draft on him. Of course, the Ravens, if they wanted to even check his medical, they might think, boy, we have to black dot him on our board. But if he drops to the fifth or sixth round, we'll take him, kind of thing. I don't know where he ends up going, but I would say not in the first two rounds for sure. We'll see if somebody takes him in the third, fourth, fifth round. Yeah.
Okay. Who's your number 10?
Okay. My 10, number 10 guy, Trey Hodges Tomlinson. So the TCU guy, and let me get down to my notes on him, make sure that I'm doing these in a good order. So obviously people know the relationship to LaDainian Tomlinson. He's the nephew of him. He already has turned 23 in January. That's a red flag there. Not a red flag, but there's a lot of older players in this draft, but there's also an enormous range in the age that players are. So, you know, he's a January of 2000 birthday. He's also very small, 5'8", 178, 29-inch arms, 4.41 speed. He still, even with those limitations, played primarily on the outside in college. And you wouldn't necessarily do that, but then again, when you're a really terrific athlete at the college level, it's more likely you'll play out of position for your size. He's purely a slot guy in the NFL. Reads breaks very well. That's what really makes up for his size limitations. And frankly, his speed is not top end. So, you know, it's nice to see a guy who breaks well with that kind of frame and size, frame and speed, rather. I think he plays bigger than who he is downhill, which was one of the nice things to see on tape is, I want to see a guy who hits, goes through the body or goes low. And the more he goes through the midsection hips of the player, as opposed to goes for the knees of the player, if you go for the knees and you don't know if you're getting the whole set of tackles, then you really want to make sure he's able to consistently get there. If he goes through the middle of the body, he's able to do that at a little smaller size. That's a very good sign. in terms of that. And if he's a twister, that's the weakest of all in terms of how you're going to attack players after the catch. 36 passes defensed, 5 interceptions among those in 38 games at TCU. Fantastic ball production rate, had 3 forced fumbles to add to that. I would think, and you know, you made the point about zone versus man earlier. And if you get zone, if Denard, I think this is quoting him, is saying, if you play zone, you're going to get opportunities to get the football. Eyes in the backfield in zone coverage is a huge impact on total ball production. So the man corners, I would think they start with a disadvantage because it's harder for them to find the football. And college quarterbacks give them more chances, particularly when they're not super accurate, to find that football and particularly to find it on an underthrow. But you know, I still like the high ball production guys, and Travius Hodges Tomlinson does that. Not a great gambler yet, and he's had some penalty problems in college that has come up. So we're not ready to call this guy Marcus Peters yet. And there are other guys in this draft, a couple other guys who are, had the Marcus Peters traits. But love his ball production at his size and play the way he does. So had pretty heavy zone scheme that he played at TCU. But I think he'd be a good pickup for the Ravens, probably in round 3. And he might not even last to number 86. So we'll see.
Yeah, to me, he was a reminiscent of another TCU cornerback who was a little undersized coming out back in the day, Jason Verrett. People may remember Jason Verrett had really, really unfortunate injury luck throughout his NFL career. I want to say he's torn his ACL at least 3 times.
Hey guys, I want to tell you about the Eufy Video Lock, because when I'm not podcasting, I am. My day job is a smart home specialist, and the Eufy Video Smart Lock is perfect. This is what you guys need to go get. It replaces the deadbolt on your door, so now you can come home without fumbling with keys. You can just type in a code, or even better, use your fingerprint to unlock. After 1 second, you put your finger there, pops out, my door's open. It's perfect. It also is an integrated video doorbell. We've all seen the video doorbells. We all know the ones that are out there. I've seen many of them get stolen. No one's going to steal this because it's your door lock. It's impossible for them to steal. There's no monthly fee. Other ones do. But this one, it'll record locally, so you never have to pay if you don't want to. The battery, it lasts up to 4 months. Plus, it notifies you ahead of time. And I mentioned earlier, 1 second fingerprint recognition. No, I meant 1 second till it opens. The AI self-learning chip will learn your fingerprint even faster, and then it opens up. Completely keyless entry. No more keys. And I know I set this up as I'm a smart home specialist, but anyone can install this. All you need is a Phillips screwdriver. That's it. And then you're done. Guys, I love this product. Make sure you check it out. Now, here's the easiest thing to do. Just go on to Google or whatever you prefer and search Eufy Video Lock. That's EUFY Video Lock. Or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your door, just like me, just like Ken.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
It's been a lot with Jason Verrett, but came out, was drafted by the Chargers. His rookie season looked like, you know, the next coming, right? It was really, really good. But he was about an inch taller. I want to say he was 5'9", 189 coming out. Inch taller, maybe about 10 pounds heavier than Hodges Tomlinson. But just remember when I was watching Tre'Davious, I was like, man, this looks like Jason Ferguson. Just you see him, right, in the size, and just kind of the first thing that comes to mind is like, what if the TCU corner is kind of an undersized guy who went on to the NFL and had some initial success. And, you know, it's just unfortunate that Jason Verrett's career has, you know, kind of had that injury thing with it. But, the size thing with him to me is just like, look, I mean, put on the tape and watch him play. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's small, but he goes out there and he competes. And like you said, he makes plays on the ball and tackles, he gets guys on the ground. So, hey, until he shows he can't do it at the NFL level, you bring him in and you trust the tape.
Well, very good. So was he on your list somewhere?
Honorable mention.
Very good.
He's in the honorable mentions. Some of those guys in my honorable mention list, I want to say two or three of those guys, I could have flipped them for like the ninth and 10th guys on the list. It could have gone either way.
Yeah, I had some of that too.
So are we on nine now?
Your number nine guy.
Number nine. This is probably going to, he's probably going to be higher on your list. Julius Brents. Quarterback out of Kansas State.
Actually, also my number nine guy.
Okay, look at that. Ooh, yeah. There we go. I think we did this on another show.
Yes, we did. Where we had the last five were exactly the same or something. Exactly and it was a position where there was a lot of variability.
It was like edge rusher, right?
Yeah,
was
it edge rusher? Right.
Yeah. So, hey, there we go. Right off the bat. 6'2", 198. You know, you like that aircraft carrier size. 34-inch arms.
There you go.
Brother, he's got it. Not a lot of cornerbacks with that kind of arm length. Ironically, there's another one in this draft, but I went back and looked, and at least since 2010, I want to say there's like two or three other guys with 34-inch arm length at corner. Hadn't been a ton of them. None of the names would be names that people recognize, so I'm not even going to mention them. But, you know, Brent played in the Big 12. There's certainly a stigma when it comes to defense in the Big 12. Mm-hmm. I get that. People may have a picture of him, you know, kind of giving up some stuff to Quentin Johnson against TCU in the game where they matched up. Quentin Johnson got him a couple times in that game. But what really kind of turned me on Brents, I liked his tape. I thought he was solid because you look at that size and you look at the way that he moves, the way he's able to sink his hips for a guy that size. You know, obviously he's you know, going to be able to be physical. So I liked all of that. But then he went to the Senior Bowl. And I saw him at the Senior Bowl, and I'm like, this looks even better. What he did there in terms of his one-on-one reps, I was like, this looks even better than what I saw on tape. Now, obviously, the tape, you know, you put the highest, you know, weighting on. But going to that game in that environment against, you know, those players, that carries weight too. And to see, you know, the way that he was able to really kind of shut some guys down in the one-on-ones. It wasn't Darius Rush level, but it was still pretty good. And so it really kind of pushed me over the top. I mean, I was kind of there with him anyway, but I was like, yeah, I just wish there was just a little bit more there. It's one of those guys where it's like, you know, everything looks pretty good, but you wish he would just kind of finish the play, right? Finish it. Don't allow the catch, knock the ball away, maybe even prevent the throw from being made on some occasions because of your coverage. You know, I just want to see a little bit of that more consistently. And he showed that more consistently at the Senior Bowl. So I think he's a ascending type guy who the arrow's kind of pointing up on him. He's just got all of this physical ability that, you know, really can be honed and refined. So I'm really interested in him and to see, you know, kind of how he develops once he gets in whatever his team will be in the NFL.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. He does not have that top end speed. So that's one of the issues with him. Otherwise, he really looks a little bit like this year's Tyreek Woolen in terms of being an enormous guy who comes with a lot of the physical traits you want. Tyreek Woolen, I mean, boy, they made him into a great player right away, even though we're questioning, is it round two, round five, you know, that you take this guy. But that really worked out. I'm with you exactly on what the key negative is that he just does not have as much. PFF has a forced incompletion rate, and his was only 11.8%, 6 out of 51 targets. Now, first of all, that's a fair number of targets to get. So it shouldn't be a case of there's a lot of variability in that and only forcing 6 incompletions. I mean, there's guys in this draft who were upwards of 20, I believe, in terms of forced incompletions for the year. So it's bad. I mean, it's really bad. And it doesn't match the measurables in terms of being a guy who creates a large overlapping interception radius on the receiver's catch radius. So it should be a guy who could make plays from behind with those kind of arms, across the body, obviously take away all kinds of space when he's underneath in terms of underthrows and whatnot. And also, you know, at his size, he should be a guy who should be able to push people out of the sidelines. He should be that Ike Taylor, Jimmy Smith, I own this sideline guy. And he really, you know, has not shown that so far at the college level. So, you know, hopefully we'll see more than that at the pro. You know, I think that Brents is an interesting guy because of his speed as where you play him. And he creates an interesting thing. If your team plays a lot of cover three, you probably do not want Brents on the back end because I don't think he's the greatest read guy. I think what he gives you is a lot of what Kyle Hamilton gives you, a huge size guy underneath to threaten what's going on. And also he has some prodigious hits on tape also. So having him underneath to you know, break up wide receiver screens and go after a running back when, you know, he's got the ball. I love all that stuff. But I think on the back end of cover three, he actually, you get less value out of him there. So I think your team has to kind of adjust and have your safety be the guy who drops to the back end of his side. Let's say he's at left cornerback, then the safety has to go back where it normally be, both corners going back on the outside in cover three if you want to do that. Kind of a mystery of where to go, round two, round three at the latest. You know, somebody will take a chance on him by then. There's just too many interesting measurables for people not to do that.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, Julius Brent, my number nine guy, so we're to your number eight guy.
Number eight for me, Tyreek Stevenson out of Miami. 6'0", 6 feet even, 198 pounds. Pretty decent measurables otherwise. A little over 9.5-inch hands, 32-inch arms. Ran a 4.45. You know, pretty solid in the jumps. I think he had a 38.5 vert, 10 broad. Agility drills, no bueno. 4.41 short shuttle, 7.09 three cone. No bueno in the agilities for Tyreek. Started out at Georgia, ended up transferring to Miami. So again, just, you know, every time we talk about Georgia and you think about their defense and you start naming the players who transferred, when you're like, oh, and they were still that good without these guys that left and went on to other schools and had pretty decent careers at other schools. You think about the pass rusher last year, Jermaine, blanking on his last name. Now he ended up going to the Jets.
Johnson.
There you go. You just think about these guys that leave there. So anyway, back to Tyreek. I will admit on tape, it was just okay, right? It was just okay. I said, look, I can look at the guy's size. I can look at the way he moves. I can look at the way he runs. I could definitely see him playing corner in the NFL, but it was just okay. Like in my notes, that was the biggest thing that I had. I was like, I don't think his eye discipline is really good. I think he's aggressive as a tackler, but, you know, can be one of those guys who you know, is looking for like the kill shot at times, right? A little undisciplined with it at times. But it was just all like, okay. But then another guy goes to the Senior Bowl. I'm like, this looks a whole lot better. You see him in the one-on-one reps, much stickier coverage, much more disciplined with his eyes. Obviously, you're not going to see any, you know, tackling, you know, opportunities there. But just in the coverage reps that he had in practice against a variety of different wide receivers there, I'm just like, okay, this looks more like a round two, round three type of situation here. So I kind of don't know how to feel about it because I'm like, the tape was just okay. Goes to the Senior Bowl and it looks above average, but who is he? You know, which one of the guys is he?
It's interesting because with good press corners, it's always they don't get a lot of highlight tape with what they do right at the line of scrimmage. But that's where they end plays before they become highlights. Is that, you know, they're up there, they disrupt that timing right off the line of scrimmage. The quarterback has to go to a second read or doesn't, you know, work through that read. It ends up being a sack, you know, or it ends up being a, you know, a pressure that ends up in a throwaway, and you don't really focus on that corner. So if you watch highlight tapes, you'll miss a lot of that from Tyreek Stevenson because it's a big part of his game. I've got him, by the way, at 33-inch arms. It might be different from you, but that's what I saw in terms of his combine.
I got it from I should credit it, my source, Kent Lee Platt, Math Bomb at Math Bomb on Twitter. The guy does the relative athletic store. That's where all these numbers are coming.
I'll have to look at that then. I thought I had the combine stuff, but maybe I don't in this case. For his size, I didn't really see as good a downhill player. And Yeah, I hear your kill shot thing. I think that's probably part of it. You know, he does bring some additional value on special teams, and I think that's where he's going to end up learning how to tackle again. he also had been a return man. I think he had a really nice return on tape in one of the games where it just looked like he was a man among boys getting bounced off of. I don't know if you saw that one in particular. Played 41 college games, 21 passes defense, 3 interceptions among those. What I liked about his type of PD, and I lit a lot of that this year in terms of type of interception and type of PD as we go through this will be something. Had a lot of good ball production that was in trail coverage or by reach around. So reach around from the back or trail coverage on slants and other things where he's reaching across the body of the receiver. And that is good use of length is all I can say. You do it either way you do it, from behind or across the body. I'm happy. I was actually pretty happy with what Pepe looked like in his limited time just reaching across the body, much better than his 29-inch length should allow. And, you know, he was good at that. But I think, Tyreek, that's one of his really positive. He did not have good production in terms of yards per target, 8.8 yards per target on 40 targets this last season. It's not what you want. And he did that with a 42.5% completion rate. So that means on the balls that are getting completed, he's probably giving up pretty close to 20 yards a throw. Not what you want, obviously. I think he's one of the players, and he might be one of the only ones really in this group who I think a move to safety might really be dictated at some point. It just seems to play better for who he is, but we'll see. It's you don't want to move people too early. You certainly don't want to move tackles to guard too early, and you don't want to move outside corners to safety too early. But I think that would be it would be the fallback position for him. Is you know, can he play safety if he goes in that? So you know, I think because I expect him to go in probably the second round late, I don't think the Ravens get him unless they trade down in this draft. So that's one of the things that there's a big black hole there between 22 and 86, where the Ravens only get players if they trade down.
Yeah. There's another guy in this draft, I'm sure we'll talk about him, who there's some possible move to safety scuttlebutt out there about him. I'm sure we'll get there. But that was my number 8 guy. Who's your?
Okay. My number 8 guy is DJ Turner of Michigan. So every time I got to a Michigan guy, and this is at all positions, my fear, my jaundiced eye gets turned on as the Ravens with their Michigan connection are going to overvalue this guy. And oh my God, I don't want that. Turner size is kind of a limitation. He's 178 pounds is the biggest thing. 5'11", he could still play on the outside at that. 30.75 inch arms is a little bit short, but 4.26 speed. And right. You can't make up for that. So he doesn't have the ideal size for the outside, but on the other hand, that makeup speed, you'd be wasting it. And that's what long speed is really used most by corners when they make up. When they make a mistake, when they get a little bit behind, they can come back and they can make a play on either a long ball or any sort of where they have to run a long distance. And in the slot, you don't usually have to run a long distance to block, to stop the throw. It's usually on the outside because the ball has to travel. So anyway, just a little bit of physics there. So certainly doesn't have the ideal size for the outside otherwise. Man heavy at Michigan. He was outstanding the last 2 years, 5.2 yards per target overall when they force him into this man role, which is, I think, probably where he will excel in the NFL. He had 3 ints and 17 passes defense, which looked pretty good for a 27-game stretch. But they threw at him like almost no other corner in college football. 4.8. Well, and when I say that, there's plenty of other bad college corners who are getting a lot of targets, but not good college corners who are looking at the draft. So 4.8 targets per game. I think that was a function of him being following the best receiver on the other team. And the reason I say that is he's not a consistent left corner, right corner guy. You see him on both sides of the field on the tape. So I think that's what's happening there. Lots of good press reps despite that size. He's really fearless at the line of scrimmage. A lot of that comes with having good makeup speed is that he's able to put his hands on the opponent and still try to press even at his size. I think a little bit of a project probably still at the NFL because bigger receivers are going to give him a lot of trouble off the line of scrimmage. But we'll see. I think he goes fairly early in this draft. And one of the measurables teams, and there are a few of them, the Raiders historically, of course, and the Patriots and the Seahawks may say, look, we'll just put him with our DB's coach and we'll fix him. And in the last two teams' case, they'll be correct. And if the Raiders draft him, then he's screwed.
Well, you know the Ravens. You mentioned the connection. Obviously, he was there in 2021 when McDonald was the DC. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Mike obviously knows him and probably has an understanding more than, you know, some of the other NFL DCs who are just watching the film, an understanding of kind of who the kid is, how he works, you know, what he does best and kind of, you know, how he can be put in situations to do that. So all those things are pluses, right, in terms of, you know, information and understanding what to do with him. But like you said, you always do wonder if that causes them to go a little overboard because they do have, you know, all of that information on some of these guys. So I don't know. I feel like there's a way somehow, possibly maybe that DJ could end up a Raven, but we'll see.
Where did you have Turner on your list?
Honorable mention. There you go. He was an honorable mention. And the only reason I was so low on him and didn't have him in the top 10 was the size thing. Mm-hmm. Like you said, just I don't get like height doesn't bother me as much as weight.
We're interesting because like, we got a really light cornerback coming.
We do, but he does some stuff that trumps the weight, in my opinion. I'm just like, you know what? I think I've comped him to a Kenyan marathoner. In terms of a body type.
Let's not give it all away.
Yeah, let's save it. All right.
So you got your number seven guy is next.
Okay. Now I know I'm lower on this guy than everybody else because, you know, he went to the combine and put on a freak show. Deonte Banks is my number seven guy. And for me, look, the measurables, the athletic testing, everybody saw that. If you were going to build a cornerback, right, in a lab, 6 foot, 197, you know, a little over 9-inch hands, a little over 31-inch arms, 4.35, 40, 42-inch vert, 11 broad, right? If you're going to build a cornerback in the lab, this is what you would build, right? This is what it would look like. This is who it would look like. But see, I'll say this. I started watching his teammate, Jacorian Bennett, first, like early on, because typically what I do is I'll try to watch some guys in the summer, right? Right. So I'll try to watch some previous year stuff on them from the summer. And then when we get into the fall, I'm more just watching guys on TV. I haven't gotten into the all 22 yet because it takes a little while for that stuff to come out. But then it comes out and usually somewhere around when the Senior Bowl invites come out, that's when I really start trying to dig into the all 22. So his teammate was a Senior Bowl invite. I think he ended up being one too. I don't know if he actually went or not. But I know Jacorian Bennett was there. So I'm watching him first, right? So I'm telling this story because I kind of came late to Banks. I really was focusing on Bennett. And I would see this guy on the other side making these plays. And I'm like, well, who is this other guy over there? He's flashing. And, you know, when you're watching, that's what you do. You see other things and you jot it down. You're like, all right, I'm going to go back and look up his name. But right now I'm just jot down his jersey number and that, you know, he did this or he did that. I'll go back and look him up later. So I do that. And so then the second time around, I'm focusing exclusively on him, right, and watching him. And I kind of came away. This is going to sound bad. Not the same way that I did with Tyree Stevenson, not to that level, but kind of like, okay, yeah, now this is okay. This is solid. This is solid tape. This is okay, right? Physical guy, likes to get his hands on guys, sometimes a little too much. Obviously can run. But I was just like, I don't know. It wasn't, and then the testing happened, right? So I'm trying to reconcile those things in my mind because I'm like, he tests like a top one, two, three corner in this class. But I didn't see that on tape. So for me, that was kind of the disconnect. Like people hear that and it makes it sound like you don't like the guy. We've got him in our top 10 and you probably have him a little higher than me. So clearly he's a very good player, but I just didn't see the athleticism that he displayed at the combine as consistently on tape. I saw flashes of it for sure. At times you'd see him, you know, get out of a pedal and drive, you know, on a ball, or you'd see him change direction, you know, only have to maybe take a step or two steps, you know, maybe to get out of a transition and, you know, sort of locate the ball or match a receiver. So I saw flashes of it, but I don't know. It wasn't a complete one-to-one for me. So that's probably why I have him at seven and not higher.
All right. Well, I had him at six, but okay. not a whole lot higher. I love the guy. And honestly, I think I'm going to just say pretty much the opposite to what you just said. So I hope we can still be friends after this.
Of course.
In terms of this.
Just opinions.
Yeah, sure. His production is one of his strongest suits to me. 4.3 yards per target in 2022. And he's targeted 60 times. So they're throwing at him. And they're still not, you know, you might as well have a run game at 4.3 yards per target. And there's a lot of turnovers included in that, or a lot of turnover risk included in that, both on the sacks and the interception he got. And I don't know if there was a tip ball that involved him. He did give up 4 touchdowns. So he got beat a few times. But to me, you had to throw at somebody at Maryland, and they had a couple of great corners they were presenting. Banks, I think, was more frequently on the better of the opposing receivers. I can't say 100%, but I did see some on tape of Banks on both sides of the field, as opposed to Bennett and Banks were just all playing left corner, right corner, you know, game by game. This is something that it would be an explainer of some of that production numbers. He only had one missed tackle on the season. Now, most of the guys in this group, 5-6 missed tackles, you know, missed tackle rate is in the 10 to 15% range. And, you know, you pretty much, I look at a 10 or 11% missed tackle rate and I say, okay, that's kind of normal for even a really good corner. And then you have other guys who are up closer to 20%, and that's not acceptable. But then you have Banks, who's only got one missed tackle the whole season. Why that might not be good is I'm assigning a weight to the production, and that's what's kept it down. I don't know that we can depend on that to play as big a factor at the NFL level. So it was my only kind of a little thing about it. He said some injury history that you know, we got to look back on and be cognizant of. I think, you know, he's a guy who could possibly play slot corner, but I think it's a waste of his size, all the explosiveness and speed we saw, to not put him in a position where the ball has to travel and allow him to make a play on the football. You know, if you buy into the versatility argument about him, then you think, okay, if something happened to Hamilton, he's the guy who can move to slot corner, and then you keep Humphrey on the outside. Mm-hmm. So he gives you that in terms of value if you're the Ravens. I think he ends up being a guy who could be very close to the intersection of need and value, but I honestly believe that Banks is going to, at 22, but I believe that Banks is going to be there. Other corners are going to be there. Ravens will have other choices as well because of inefficiency in the first 21 picks, including the quarterbacks all going off.
Yep.
That are going to make other players too interesting. A trade down is the Ravens' probably best way to get him. And if there's truly not the run on cornerbacks that they see, I really want them to get my number three cornerback at 22. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm hopeful that'll work out. But love to see Deontay Banks a Raven. And if it was Banks and Bennett on, they get both of them, I'd be even more thrilled.
Yeah, that would be a great double dip. Yeah. And the Ravens, we know, the Ravens like to double dip at certain positions. They've done it, you know, at different spots in different drafts. So wouldn't surprise me if we saw a cornerback double dip in this one.
An early two and maybe a four on Bennett, or five even?
Yeah, I wonder after his combine if he gets the five, because, I mean, mm-hmm. he really ran well and jumped well too. But I definitely see that 4-5 range.
Yeah. We'll be back for part two in just a few minutes. Actually, it's a download for you, with Michael Crawford on the remainder of the cornerback class. Talking a few.
Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt. A classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA, so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters, Because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but if you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from JELDWIN. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on JELDWIN windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.